You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Well, before we turn to Matthew 14, you'll find the words up on the screen there. Also, we'll be using the New Revised Standard Version today. Just a little bit of a travel log, so you can get a little bit of context as to where this is all happening. About 4 years ago, we were, a group of us here from the church, traveled to the Holy Land, and we had a, you know, this was our view from the hotel, pretty tough. That is the city of Tiberias. It is on the western shore of the Sea of Galilee. It was a city that was founded in and around about the time Jesus was living, to basically manage the fisheries industry that was exporting fish all over the Roman Empire. So you wonder what the disciples were doing. They were part of a much larger Roman economy. They were catching fish, salting them. They were sending them all over the Roman world. This is the boat we were in was a little bigger than this. But as you can see, the hills around the Sea of Galilee are tall. There's nowhere you can be on the Sea of Galilee and not see all four shores. People think, oh, it is a mighty sea, like one of the Great Lakes. No, it's like a pond. And so that's just something you need to get into your mind as you're hearing this story. Here's Dave and Barb. Hey, Barb, there you are. Nice hat. And Larry and Pat Spade there. And you can see, well, it's a little faded out here because it was misty that morning, but you can see the shoreline right behind them, even though we were out in the middle of the lake. There's Sam. Are you here, Sam? Sam, there he is, right there on the end. And the Rubenows, there you are. And Richard is right there, too. We had a great time. Just to give you an idea of how kind of pedestrian the lake is and how you don't have to worry about being out on the lake, they let Nat drive the boat. So there he is, 11 years old, steering the boat. It wasn't too much of a worry. But Justin, you know how a lot of boats have those figures on the front of our boat? You know, we had one on the front of our boat. It was Barb James. There she was. So, but again, here we are out in the middle of the lake, and look, you can still see the shore. We're on our way to the shore. This is a drawing of the Sea of Galilee. You can see Tiberias right there down in the lower left, and Magdala is another fishing village. Capernaum is where Jesus had his bachelor pad. Bethsaida is up there just on the other side of the Greek boundary. And about 15, 20 years ago, they discovered when the Sea of Galilee was really low because of a drought, someone was walking along the shore and they kicked a piece of wood that was sticking up out of the mud and muck. And it turned out to be a 2,000-year-old boat that had been sunk into the mud. It's 26 and a half feet long, 7.5 feet wide, 4.5 feet high. It was probably one of the largest classes of ships on the Sea of Galilee. There are fore and aft sections that probably had a deck, probably had a mast, so it could have either been sailed or rowed. This would have been one of the higher class ships on the boat, probably not something that the disciples would have been messing with. There's what's left of it right there on display after having been soaked in all kinds of, you know, fluids and things like that to keep it from decaying anymore in the air. And this is what they reckon it looked like. So, you know, pretty sophisticated ship for a little pond like the Sea of Galilee. But just as you're hearing this story today, wanted you to be able to get a sense of what the lake looked like and what the kind of crafts that were going back and forth across the lake looked like. And I really want to give you an idea as we look at this story how important it is to read the text. John Dominic Crossan, who we were listening to the last couple of days, said that, you know, one of the things that he and Marcus Borg, who recently passed away, were known for was their revolutionary and radical strategy in helping to renew Christianity. And you know what it is? Read the Bible. That's their radical suggestion. And I think this story today is a perfect example of what you can gain when you actually read the text and not just kind of go from memory about kind of the stories you sort of think you know. Our story for today is the episode where Peter walks on water, right? Do you remember that one? Most of us have kind of a vague memory of what that episode is about. This story appears in Mark, our earliest gospel, in Matthew, and in John. Now, Matthew expands on Mark's version, and John actually shortens it up. Thought it was too long, so he whacked out some parts. And it is not in Luke at all. And this is really unusual because we know that Matthew and Luke had a copy of Mark sitting in front of them as they wrote. And so this has come to be called Luke's great omission by scholarships. We don't know why he left it out. Maybe scholars suggest that the copy of Mark that Luke had was missing a few pages, you know, just had a chunk missing. So it was no decision on Luke's part to leave it out. It just didn't make the cut because it was missing. But on the other hand, Matthew loved this story. He loved it so much that he added a bunch to it from Mark's version. Now remember, we've talked about before how for Matthew, Jesus is the new Moses, right? So everything that happened to Moses, as you're reading the Gospel of Matthew, he works in something similar happening to Jesus. Moses had to escape from Egypt, right? What did Jesus and his family have to do only in Matthew? Escape from Egypt. Moses had power over the waters. And so what did Jesus do? He had powers over the water. Moses, you know, fed the people in the desert with manna. Oh, what does Jesus do? Feeds people in the desert. So Matthew picks up on all of these and kind of expands them. If it's a Moses-like characteristic, it's a bonus for Matthew. But then he added his own spin on this story. It's only in Matthew where we get the story of Peter trying to walk on water. It's not in any of the other versions. In Mark and John, the disciples are scared in the storm, and Jesus comes to them and stills the waters. That's about it. But in this version, Matthew tells the Peter story. But again, I think we've missed the point of what Matthew was trying to say. So listen carefully as you hear this story again today, and then we're going to unpack it and see if it's anything like what you remember it to be like.
It's interesting that you chose that crazy picture of me at the bow of my boat, which is my favorite place, because I actually was imagining this passage and what it would be like to walk on water and figuring that's as close as I was going to get.
And here I thought you were thinking about the Titanic.
Sorry. Words of wisdom from Matthew. Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he came walking toward them on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately, Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshiped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Let's pray. Loving and gracious Spirit, for this story that comes to us from so long ago, we're grateful. May we hear it with open hearts and open minds, so that as the Spirit moves within us, none of us might leave this place unchanged. We gather as followers of Jesus. Amen. Well, once upon a time, there was a hunter who had a beloved hunting dog who never separated from one another, especially when they would go out hunting. And sadly, one day the inevitable happened and his beloved dog died. So he couldn't not go hunting, and he needed to find a replacement dog. So he went to the best breeder in the area and said, "You know, I need a new dog to go hunting with." Now, the breeder knew this guy and knew that he had pretty high expectations. He also knew he was really cheap. So he said, "You know what? I have got just the dog for you, and it's something really special. And so you're going to want to, you know, think about spending a little more, because this dog is not like very many other dogs." And the guy was unconvinced, but they went out, took the dog hunting to kind of test it out. And there they were out in the marsh, and the ducks went flying, and the hunters shot the duck, and the duck splashed down in the water. The dog, seeing the duck fall, went running down to the shore and leapt out onto the lake and landed on the water and walked out on the water, not getting a single hair wet, and reached down where the duck was, picked it up out of the water, and walked right back and dropped the duck right at their feet. And the breeder was like, And the hunter was totally nonplussed. Like, he wasn't going to give on. Like, he was impressed, afraid that he was going to have to pay more, right? So so they're waiting for a few minutes, and boom, they shoot another duck. Down into the lake it goes. The dog goes straight out again and goes right into the on top of the water and is walking out. And the breeder is trying to see if this guy is going to even crack, you know, and notice that this dog, oh my gosh, it's walking on the water. Nothing, nothing. The dog comes back, drops the duck at their feet. One more time, the duck, and the duck goes down, the dog goes out. Third time, comes back, drops the duck at his feet. The dog has not got one wet hair on it. And the breeder finally can't stand it anymore and says, "Now come on. I mean, that is one special dog. Don't you notice anything unusual about that dog?" And the hunter looked at him and said, "Yeah, that dog can't swim." You know, Peter is the de facto leader of the disciples, right? You hear this all the time in all the texts. He's often used as, by the gospel writers, as the typical person. Example. He does something and we say, "Ah, I know that feeling," right? Or he does something and we ask, "How dense can one person be?" Right before we start sensing that, oh, I can see myself in him, right? We can relate to Peter because of his humanity, because of his doubts, because of his questions. The bottom line is that Peter has a basic misunderstanding of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. And he shows it over and over and over again. In Matthew 16, just a couple chapters after this event, you might recall that Jesus starts talking about going to Jerusalem, where he's going to be killed. And it doesn't take a soothsayer to see that things are leading in that direction. But Peter takes him aside and says, "Stop talking about that. Stop talking that nonsense." And you remember Jesus' response to him probably is, "Get behind me, Satan," right? Stop trying to discourage me. Peter doesn't see the big picture at all and refuses to not acknowledge the reality of what is coming. You might remember that the night before the crucifixion, that Peter denies Jesus, not once, but three times, right? So he's always kind of the one that's not quite up to speed with what is going on and what is expected of him. Today's passage is just one more example of Peter's completely missing the point. So let me suggest that calling this passage in the first place, Peter walks on water, is a complete misinterpretation of the story. I think it would be better to call it Peter tests Jesus. Here's the situation. Jesus has already tried several times to get away from all these pesky people, right? They will not leave him alone. Once they discover that he can heal and that he can feed and do all these things, they come from all over the region, and he can't get rid of them. They keep following him no matter where he goes. He's just learned that his cousin, John the Baptist, has been beheaded in prison. So he's not only mourning that loss, but he's coming face to face with reality of what happens with people who get crossways with authority. He needs some time alone to think about, oh my gosh, with John gone, that means it falls to me. And what does that mean for me if John the Baptist just got beheaded? So he needs some time to process. He needs some time to be alone. But no, everybody is following him. He's still gracious. He heals a few more people. He feeds a few more thousand people, right? And he still wants some alone time. So he, number one, sends the disciples away because they're the worst, right? So get rid of these guys first, puts them in the boat, sends them across the lake. Second, he dismisses the crowd. You guys go. And third, he goes up to the mountain to pray, to be alone. Now notice that the disciples are doing exactly what Jesus has told them to do for a change, right? And then remember that in Hebrew culture, in Hebrew symbolism of the time, the sea is symbolic. It's symbolic of pre-creation chaos. So what is worse than being at sea at night in a storm? I mean, think about Jonah. You know how desperate he is to get away from God's call because he gets in a boat and goes to sea. That's supposed to be a joke. Anybody that is, you know, from the Hebrew culture goes, man, that guy's desperate, right? And so that's the kind of attitude that's going on here. And all night, the disciples are trying to get across the lake, which, as you can see, not very big, right? And so it's not a huge body of water. They're always in sight of all four shores. It's not really a storm. It just says it's a wind, right? It's just a wind. So let's face it. This is embarrassing, right? This is embarrassing. Come on. These guys, what do they do for a living? They're professional fishermen. And they are, I mean, this is not Wicked Tuna, right? This is the Sea of Galilee. And morning is coming, and they have not managed to make a simple jog across the corner. They're not even crossing the whole lake. They're just kind of crossing from one quadrant to the other. They haven't done it. And they're probably more annoyed than anything. But note that they are not afraid until they see what they think is a ghost coming toward them on the lake. And Jesus says, don't be afraid. It's just me. It's just me. And here's the critical and typical Peter part. Peter doesn't believe him, right? He doesn't believe him. Peter says, oh yeah? Prove it. Prove it. If it is you, have me come to you on the water. Now let's stop and ask for a minute. What does this guy want? I mean, seriously, hasn't he seen enough? In the passages right before this, he's witnessed healings. He's seen Jesus feed thousands. And now he comes up with a demand like this. Peter is the one who initiates this whole thing, not Jesus. Peter is proposing a test. Let's see if it's really you. Peter can't take Jesus at his word and wants something showy, wants something spectacular. Now, the typical hand-wringing kind of sixth grade Sunday school lesson that we normally get from this story all the time, I think, is wrong. If only he'd had enough faith, he could have walked on water. He was almost there. You've heard that saccharine version before. It may be the only version you've ever heard. Peter is the only one with faith, as long as he kept his eyes on Jesus, right? As long as you keep your eyes on Jesus, all will be well, right? Have you heard that? That's the way it usually goes. But Peter becomes frightened, and down he goes, right? Blub, blub, blub. So, if only he'd kept his eyes on Jesus, he would have been fine. But I think according to the story, that's crazy talk. It's not what the text says. And it translates right into people's faith lives in a bad way. If only I had more faith, I could fill in the blank, right? Have you heard people say that? Have you thought that before? Or if only I'd kept my eyes on Jesus, I'd fill in the blank. I've heard it over and over again in so many situations. Guilt, that's what it is. Guilt for not having enough faith to understand this or that problem, to face this or that situation, to essentially, whatever your case is, to walk on water in that circumstance. When the realities of life, accident, disease, aging, circumstance start to drag us down. We're sinking. This story is often at fault for adding insult to injury in our spiritual lives by heaping on a heaping helping of guilt. Ah, you know, if only she'd had more faith, it would have all been better. And that's a bunch of bunk. The point of this story is not tisk, tisk, tisk to Peter and in turn us for not believing hard enough. That's not what this story is about. Peter is essentially challenging Jesus, challenging nature, challenging reality. Okay, prove it, God. Let me do what Jesus is doing. Is it pride? Is it ego? A friend once said of this passage, yeah, he's like trying to keep up with the Jesuses, right? And whether you are trying to keep up with the Jesuses or trying to keep up with the Joneses, you're going to have trouble. That's a bad way to live your life. It's not about having enough faith to walk on water. The point of this story, despite evidence to the contrary, is that we don't have to be afraid. In fact, I think the point of this story is stay in the boat. Yeah? Stay in the boat. Good grief. This is not about having enough faith to do spectacular what's-its. It's about believing Jesus when, in the midst of frustration and aggravation and fear, we hear his words, don't be afraid. Isn't that what he said to the disciples? Don't be afraid. The point of this story isn't about spectacular evidences of one's faith. It's about trusting God enough to stay in the boat, knowing that even managing to stay in the boat is often an accomplishment in and of itself. For most of us, life's circumstances take enough out of us that the thought of doing anything at all spectacular to overcome them is ridiculous. But that's okay. Stay in the boat. The boat is where your companions are, yes? It's where you literally know the ropes because you're a professional fisherman, right? Even in the midst of challenges. I think one of the most important parts of this story to pay attention to is when Jesus says to Peter, "O you of little faith, why did you doubt?" Right? Isn't that the takeaway that you get from a lot of from this story all the time? Oh, you of little faith. You hear it echoing in your own head. Oh, if only I'd had more faith. Right? But look at the way the story is written. Jesus is not referring to any doubt that caused Peter to sink. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about Peter's doubt that caused him to challenge Jesus with the test in the first place. Right? That's the doubt he's talking about. You shouldn't have gotten out of the boat in the first place. Let's be clear. This story is not about how amazing it is that Jesus is literally or metaphorically walking on water. Such abilities are a typical element in ancient stories that attribute power over nature to whoever the hero figure is. Long before Jesus, 500 years before Jesus walked on water, the Buddhist Sariputta did it. And depending on the source that you're looking at, so did the Greek god Orion. People in this culture were used to that kind of behavior. Some of us had the privilege of being with John Dominic Cross in the last couple of days. He's one of the preeminent Jesus scholars of our generation. And one of his mantras is, it doesn't matter one little bit if you see this story as literal or metaphorical. The challenge is to ask what it meant to early Christians. What did it mean to early Christians? And when it comes to this story, he suggests that it's a parable to the early church that's not unlike the American Express commercial that you might recognize. Don't leave home without it, right? In this case, it's don't leave shore without Jesus. And if you do, whatever you do, stay in the boat. Life is full of storms and difficulties that make us afraid. And despite the seeming lack of evidence at times, peace is inevitably at the other end of the pendulum swing, right? That's the way life goes. We all know people, or we have lived through tragedies with people who now won't darken the door of a church. Why? Because they blame God for this crisis or that loss in their lives, which has caused them so much pain. They just can't work out the reason this or that happened. And since the cause is incomprehensible to them, and it's got to be somebody's fault, God gets the blame. God is the easy scapegoat. And that's where this parable comes in so meaningfully. If we demand spectacular things for our own benefit from a God of convenience, we're bound to end up all wet. Peter was saying to Jesus, "Prove who you are by doing something showy for my benefit." Sorry. That's not the way things work. But it's good to know that if we're foolish enough to put God to the test by demanding something spectacular and it doesn't work, that's okay too. It's clear from our story that Jesus was immediately there to help Peter when he started going under. So no matter what, we're covered. So, is there anything practical for my life in this story? I would say yes. And it's our stream of thought for today. Stay in the boat. Stay in the boat, please. Peter tested Jesus. Make me walk on water. And that was essentially a vote of no confidence from Peter, right? I don't believe you when you tell me to not be afraid. Show me something special. And secondly, this story totally is misinterpreted in order to make you and me feel guilty for not having enough faith. And we need to stop reading it that way because it's not helpful to our spiritual lives. So don't give in to the trap of testing God, wherein, guess what? You're going to be disappointed. Or B, guilt for not displaying superhuman characteristics. Oh, you of little faith, right? Those are the choices, right? Test God or give in to demands about superhuman characteristics. Hang on. Keep on doing what the Spirit calls you to do the very best that you can. Your boat may be battered. You may not be getting anywhere fast. You may be annoyed. You may be frustrated. But the day is dawning. You have got a raft full of fellow sailors. Look around. And peace is always, always close at hand. Amen. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information on our faith community or to support this outreach with a donation, be sure to visit us online at www.reachtouchteach.com.